Welcome to the Frictionless Innkeeper podcast series. Our show is brought to you by the Frictionless Guest app, which allows innkeepers to provide guests with their recommendations of the best local places to eat, play, and shop during their stay. The Frictionless Guest app is accessible through all mobile and desktop devices, and you can learn more about it by visiting frictionlessguest.com. Once again, that's frictionlessguest.com. I'm Matt Langan, and I'll be joined by Steve Short, the founder and CEO of the Frictionless Guest app. And today, we're speaking with Megan Smith, who's a renowned innkeeping expert who has her own consulting business and is the host of the Inside Innkeeping podcast. She also co-owned and operated the Vermont Inn for 13 years and served as the Vermont State Tourism Director. And she will be kind enough to share her insights today on how innkeepers can embrace Airbnb, maximize their own overall revenue, remain competitive, and all that good stuff. And Megan and Steve, how are you both doing today?
Great. Thanks for having me.
Sure, sure. Steve, how you doing?
Doing well, Matt. Thanks. Appreciate it.
Sure, absolutely. All right, Megan, let's start off at the top. I gave a little bit of a teaser about your background, but certainly didn't really go too deep on that. Would love to hear, you know, more about your background and how you got to be where you are today.
Sure, thank you. My husband and I started our careers with Hyatt Hotels, and when our children were old enough to go to school, we decided we wanted to do something on our own. So we went to a seminar called How to Own and Operate a Country Inn by what was then Oates and Bredfeld, is now Inn Partners, for whom I produce my podcast, Inside Innkeeping. So we attended the conference, decided innkeeping was what we wanted, and we found the Vermont Inn right away. We wanted to be near a ski resort. We wanted to have a restaurant. It just ticked off all our boxes. So in 1995, we packed up and moved to Vermont, which was the most wonderful experience we could have ever imagined. And when our children went to college, we sold the inn, which was sort of always our exit strategy, which is an exit strategy is something I always encourage my clients to have. And I decided to run for political office and spent 2 years as a state representative in Vermont and then was appointed the commissioner of tourism position for 6 years. And so, you know, really, really loved tourism. So now I'm on my own. That was an appointed position. My husband and I have relocated to Connecticut, and I'm, you know, running my consulting business and just really enjoying all aspects of tourism down here.
That's great. Perfect segue, too. Tell us about some of the consulting services that you provide. And I know there's a big focus on providing operational value to innkeepers. Would love to hear more about that.
Well, I think one of the things that I've found is I think my expertise lies in operations. And I think that because of my hotel background and that those are very basic things that don't really change. It's about putting structure in place, being a good manager, delegating, all the sort of basic management skills I learned when I was 22, 23 in the hotel business. As far as the newer things, you know, marketing, Airbnb and all that, I've been very fortunate to be able to keep up with all that by attending conferences now that I might not have been able to attend as much when I was an innkeeper. So, but I'm finding now that the most recent clients that I've gotten are all trying to figure out the whole Airbnb situation. Do we beat them? Do we join them? And my suggestion since Airbnb came on, you know, into the world was everybody should try putting their rooms on Airbnb. And I most recently was talking to a client that was in a city. She was in an urban situation, and she wanted to put her whole inn on Airbnb as, you know, 8 rooms as sort of a house. And so I worked her through that. You know, I worked her through that. We talked about how to price it, how to make sure, you know, the dates are always kept up, you know, on the calendar. So it was not, you know, people didn't try to book it and there was other bookings already established. So, you know, those are just little things I've been doing lately.
That's great. Steve, you want to jump in?
Yeah. Well, the Airbnb thing, again, we don't want to go too heavily into it because we've talked about it before, but what do you do when you work with the property when they're interested in this? I mean, is it at first a matter of they're coming to you and saying, is this something that we could do? And that's the first thing. And then if so, what is it that you do when you consult with them to try to help them get things working on Airbnb? And what kind of what things would you advise other properties to consider?
Well, I usually try to see every client comes to me at a different point. Some people are already on and not getting any bookings. Some people are don't have any idea, I've never even been on the Airbnb website. So if someone comes to me with absolutely no experience, we go on Airbnb together, I hold their hand, I show them, I know of inns that are on there, how they present themselves, and say, you know, let's just see what you would say. Let's talk about your description and telling the story of their property and why a person should book their property versus, you know, the house down the street. But the other thing that I find is sometimes they're just horrified by the prices people are getting, or, you know, the low prices in their competitive market. So we talk about how can you rationalize lowering your price. I always suggest take breakfast out of it. People want breakfast. They can buy it a la carte when they visit you. Take out anything you can. Take out your house, your cleaning fee, because you have housekeepers on staff anyway, you know, and just to keep the rate lower. And so those are some things we work through. And the other thing that I think is really important is just knowing, having something like your app or having some way that your people, your staff is not having to deal with these people that are there at a lesser rate because they booked through Airbnb. So make it, you know, have things available in their room so your staff is not waiting on them hand and foot to keep the labor costs down.
Interesting. Yeah. Makes sense. You're trying to price apples to apples with the competition, which in a lot of cases is not another bed and breakfast, right?
Exactly. And so, you know, and sometimes, you know, I talk through like the person in Chicago, the urban property, she wants to get wedding groups a year out. So it's committed, it's booked. And I think that's a wonderful idea. So she puts it out there as the whole house, and I'm dying to hear how it turns out because I think she's going to have a lot of success with that. She's in a neighborhood that has a lot of wedding venues, and I think it's going to be a great fit for her. And it's not that she sits empty in the summers, but, you know, she'd rather have one group all there together than eight different, you know, individual guests because, again, it's less service, it's less labor costs.
All right. So talk about some of the other things you do as a consultant and, I guess, more specifically, the operational side of things and some of the ideas that you've thrown out there and to other innkeepers and who you're working with.
Sure. So, well, one of the first clients I got when I went out on the market was somebody that was hiring an innkeeper, and it was the right person they wanted in the job, but they didn't have any experience running an inn. They had other attributes that the people felt they trusted them, they knew them. And so I literally went in and helped her and trained her to be an innkeeper right there in the property. With her, we were, answering the phone together. So that was a big job. And that went on for several months. And, you know, finally I was able to, you know, it was like training a little, you know, animal or a bird and then letting her fly. And then I check in every couple of months to just make sure everything was okay. So, you know, that was an extreme job. But, I mean, that was setting everything up for her. And I really enjoyed that. But other things I do, like, I was a lot of the clients I get just knew me when I was an innkeeper. So they call me and say, hey, I have this problem. Can you help me with it? And we just set up, you know, a loose agreement. So I've always believed when I was an innkeeper that the way to keep current was to always be interacting, mixing it up with other innkeepers. I learned so much from my peers. And some people think, oh, I don't want to talk to other innkeepers or I don't want them to know what I'm doing. But we had a group where I was the Killington, Vermont region. And there were four couples and we communicated, we helped each other. We had a website together called the Country Inns of Killington, which was a portal website back when the internet was pretty new. But we just really helped each other and we couldn't all go to everything. A lot of us were really busy at the time of the year when a lot of the national conferences were. Plus we all had kids and just going to conferences wasn't always a luxury we could afford. So one of us would go and then tell everybody else what we learned, what's new, what's happening. And I really always I belonged to several chambers. I just think it was always so important to be out there learning, but also letting people know who you were. And I can remember at one point I belonged to a chamber and we used to host a mixer every year. And it was a big investment. You'd have, you know, 80 to 100 people at your property. So whatever I was new, like if when I started doing weddings, I decorated my whole inn like a wedding. And I got a DJ that was a member of the chamber to play music. I got the tent company to donate the tent. I got the flower person at the chamber to provide the flowers. And we set it up just like a wedding. And that was how my mixer was. And we told people, you know, they could dress for a wedding. They could come to straight from work. But, you know, and so anytime I had something new I was doing, I'd try to host some kind of a chamber event to get people in to see it, taste it, feel it. And that worked really well. If I did a big renovation, we usually did additions on our property every year. We'd close for about 8 weeks and do additions and renovations. So I'd host something to bring people up to walk them through my new renovation. So I really used the chamber. I used my peers to help me get the word out of what I was doing. And we also in Vermont had a statewide organization that was very active, more for networking. We did some lobbying. But, you know, we had a lobbyist that helped us with our issues. But more, it was just all about networking and learning from one another.
What are some of the other things that you've come up with? I know in a prior conversation that you started just rattling off all these cool ideas. And what are some of the... Really?
Well,
and you probably thought about more since that conversation, but what are some of the things that you've thrown out there that might be good advice to other innkeepers, even if it might not apply to their area or exact situation? You know, there might be some similar things going on that they could say, oh, wow, that's a great idea. Maybe I'll try it with, you know, some other place that's local.
Sure. So, you know, some of the basic things I did was set up partnerships with golf courses, museums, art galleries, where we could put them on our website, give people the ideas to do as things to do when they visited us. But then also, it allowed, I would select the admission and I had, you know, set up an account. And so then I get $5 off of the museum entrance or something. And that, you know, it was good because they were sending me people, I was sending them people, and I was making a little revenue on the side from that. But one of the things I did, which worked out very well, was one of the inns that I consulted with was in kind of a remote area, but they were the closest big business to them was a hospital. And so I said, we need to go to the hospital, talk to the hiring people, the people that are recruiting for these doctors to come to Vermont. It's a whole new world these people are coming to. Put them up at our inn, host them, and assure the hospital recruiters you're going to take the best care of these people. And, you know, sometimes people would arrive that were from urban areas, didn't even have a car, they fly in. So maybe pick them up at the airport, maybe drive them down to the hospital in the morning. But that led to them booking their functions at that inn. Then the Christmas party started happening with the different departments because the doctors would take the job. Then they'd say, oh, we have to have our department Christmas party where we stayed when we came. So that was a really big, you know, it just became a whole portion of their business. And yes, it was service intensive, but I mean, that's what being an innkeeper really is. It's being service oriented. So it added some things. Somebody, you know, be available if they needed to drive them somewhere, pick them up. But, you know, we figured it out. And so that was one idea that, you know, was just a quick project I did with somebody that worked, you know, reaped a lot of good rewards. And trying to think of those other ideas I shared with you.
Nope. Yeah, you talked about, this is something that we had heard from another innkeeper on something similar, but having music, in the case of the other innkeeper, was inside the property during kind of the winter down months. But I think you had talked about maybe having outdoor concerts that you had suggested or set up, didn't you?
Yeah, and it was interesting. So this happened at my inn. So we were having hosting a wedding at our inn, and the father of the groom asked if he could come and bring a little, you know, a keyboard and play music over the weekend. Well, they had the whole inn, so I said that was fine. So after the wedding was over, I said to him, I would love to have you come play here sometimes. And they lived, you know, in the next two or three towns over. And he was thrilled. And he would come, bring his keyboard. We'd sometimes set him up outside because we had a beautiful front lawn and put tables and chairs out there, people that take their cocktails outside. In the winter months, he played in our little bar next to our wood stove. And it just, you know, and I think we see that now, music even more now than it was back then. There's music, people will come because they want to be where something is happening. And if it's appealing, they'll come back again and again. And so he didn't know anybody in our town. And by the time he was done with working with us and he retired to the South and we didn't have him anymore, he'd made new friends. People, you know, really admired him and referred him to other work. So, you know, sometimes you just take a little thing like that. The people that bought our inn used to do family movie night out in the front lawn in the fall when it got dark earlier, and they hang up a big white screen and they project the movie onto a screen, and people that, you know, would come in up from town and watch the movie and hang out, but they'd probably have dinner before or drinks while they were there and just bring in a little more revenue.
Yeah, it's cool ideas. Do you want to talk a little bit more about weddings and, you know, and if there are innkeepers out there that have the facilities, they think they have the facilities, the room and all that to do weddings, is there anything you'd pass on to them? Any ideas, thoughts?
Absolutely. I mean, weddings are so different than they used to be now, and people are always looking for alternative locations to have a wedding. And I feel like, you know, if you can figure out what you can do, and I was helping an innkeeper up on a farm up in upstate New York recently, and they're starting from scratch. I mean, they have a huge facility. They have plenty of parking. What do we do? So I said, you know, you need to reach out to your local tent company and get a relationship with them. But I said, you know, get a kickback. If somebody's booking a wedding, you ask for 15% of that revenue to come back to you because you're booking their business, and you've got to get an agreement like that right up front. Then, you know, talk to your town about what the regulations are. What, you know, so often there's noise ordinances, that sort of thing. So the wedding has to be done 10 o'clock, no, you know, sharp, everybody out. And then, oh, okay, people aren't going to be done partying at 10 o'clock. So let's find another venue where we can bus them all, put them in a bus and take them to another for an after party, and then get that partnership going. And sort of, but when you do weddings, you have to know what you can do. This is what we're good at. And when a bride and groom come to you, you know, it's very hard to let them be creative because you don't know, especially when you get started. So you just have to figure out, this is what we do. This is what we know we can do. So let's, you know, this is what we're selling. And I know that every time I deviated from what I knew we did well, it would be a big strain on our staff. It usually didn't go as well. And I regretted, you know, even if it was something as simple as these people didn't want to rent a tent for the ceremony, even though I required a backup tent in case it rained. And I said, okay, well, then it rained. And then we waited. Then we finally went out and had the wedding. It started an hour late. Well, that put our whole kitchen into a tailspin. You know, it caused problems. So I think people, especially when you're starting in the wedding business, start simple, do what you know you can do, and find a great caterer if you don't have a kitchen, and find a great rental company that's going to provide people with everything they need so that you don't have to keep a big inventory of stuff around your place.
Yeah, try to basically outsource what you can, but I mean, you're the venue, you're the glue that has to kind of hold it together and coordinate, like
exactly.
You say, it's a service space. Yeah, but there's no reason why you have to be or whatever.
Right, and like florists, yeah, I could have arranged flowers. I could have ordered wholesale flowers in and arranged them. I had that skill, but why not give that work to somebody else? And you know, that I know is going to then send me business. I think there's so much of that quid pro quo. I mean, there's so much that goes in to that business. And, you know, I can remember I started going to wedding trade shows because we were doing really well with weddings and we enjoyed it. And, you know, I'd say, okay, I rented a booth. Will you decorate my booth for me and not charge me, but then we'll promote you as well. And so I always had people, or, you know, I want to provide cake at my booth. So, you know, I would let a cake maker, they'd make me cupcakes or whatever, and then I would promote them for my booth. So it's always kind of making a cooperative event out of it and always helping raise other businesses up with me.
You mentioned, you know, pulling other local businesses in, that sort of thing. Talk about partnering. I think you had mentioned you also were talking about partnering with wineries, or I'm not sure if that's something you had actually had an in do, but you had mentioned it anyway.
Well, I think that's something that's really common now, but some people just say, okay, here you are, here's all the wineries in the area, you know, a piece of paper typed up. Taking that one step further and finding a local limousine driver or Uber driver now, or somebody that, you know, a local transport company, say, hey, you know, I'm going to put this together. Reach out to four or five, whether it's breweries in Vermont, it was more breweries, but if you're in everywhere else in the country, it's more wineries. And let's set this up and let's sell it to our people. And then, you know, your people are safe. They're not out driving themselves around. You've given them a reason to come. They're on social media promoting the heck out of it. And it's just like the wedding. You're the orchestrator of it. You're the booker. They go, they're gone all day. They come back and you get the credit.
And they're happy, sure.
They're very happy. And then you price it such that this has been going on out in Napa forever. And, you know,
right.
Sonoma, it's just sort of copying what they do. But, you know, we weren't using black stretch limousines in Vermont. We were using more, you know, van, large SUVs. And again, so that person that you're hiring as a driver is also doing airport pickups for the resort or somebody. And they'll say, hey, you got to have dinner at the Vermont Inn, or you got to, you know, oh, next time you come, you got to stay there, because they know me. And that, you know, it's all that relationship build. And not only did that make my business grow, and that's what I always tell my clients, is the more you give, the more you get back. And it is so true in the innkeeping industry. And as soon as people isolate themselves and say, I can't go to this because I can't get out of the inn, well, figure it out. Forward your phone. Hire somebody so many hours a week to come answer your phone so you can get out. It not only is the isolation not healthy, it takes away the greatest reason why you're an innkeeper, which is to just, you know, be part of a bigger community. And those people that become parts of communities when they're innkeepers last longer, they're happier, they certainly make more money, and they sell their inn for a lot better profit because they're doing all the latest and greatest. You know, I had to visit a conference, I don't know how many years ago it was, and it was like, burn the doilies. You know, that was kind of the theme of the conference. Like, everybody needs to get rid of their doilies and, you know, come into the new age of what we need in guest rooms. What we need are more outlets so people can plug in their technology. We need better lighting. We need a desk, you know, more of a desk surface for people to sit and work. You know, everything changes. But if you don't leave your inn, we don't know that. So, you know, so I can bring that to an inn that I'm working with, if they don't want to leave their inn, I can say this. But so often they bring me in and I tell them and they don't want to hear it because they don't, you know, they're, oh, it's going to be such an investment. Well, it is, but you make the money back. And then also not only do you make the money back in bookings, you make the money back when you go to sell. So your inn isn't entirely out of date when you're ready to finally sell. And, you know, people that quit advertising because they know they're selling their inn, or they quit, you know, that's all taking away from the value that they're going to get, the price they're going to get when they do sell.
Great.
I kind of jumped all over with that answer, but it's coming to
you.
That's good.
Any other thoughts in general on, or suggestions, advice that you would give to an innkeeper in terms of staying competitive and any other revenue ideas? Because I know, you know, certainly, like talking with Rob Fulton recently, of AIHP.
Yep.
Yeah, their study and all of that. You know, it's obvious with OTAs and short-term rentals and all that stuff. You know, it's not an easy time, but I think the feeling is that, yeah, you got to shift, you got to adapt. But if you do, it's actually a good time. And so any ideas on, or thoughts about that in terms of being more competitive or other ideas for revenue?
Well, I just think for revenue, I mean, we had a line of products. And this, we had favorites. People loved our salad dressing. People loved our tomato sauce. This one soup we had, tomato artichoke soup that our chef made. But there's places we learned in Vermont, I'm sure they're everywhere, put on by the Agency of Agriculture, where you can actually go to a certified kitchen under the supervision of somebody that's, you know, overseeing how you produce it, and they had all the equipment there, and we started a line of food that sold so well. And it was just another way, you know, got our name out there. We actually put it in some local stores, not a lot, mostly we just mail ordered. But that was a great revenue stream with our name. Now, these were products that we happened to have that people knew us for, but it doesn't mean you can't just find great products in your area, have them co-brand in your name, and you make the revenue off it. The people producing it make the revenue. It's another business that you're helping, whether it's honey, you know, New England honey, maple syrup, ice cream, that sort of thing. But co-branding is another great way to bring in revenue. And, you know, I think the thing is really the sky's the limit. Using your creativity, using what you're passionate about. I just did a podcast with a young man who's a surfer, and he opened, bought a motel, and he and his brother had a surfing school in San Diego. There's nowhere for them to stay. So they opened this motel. They put it only on Airbnb. They didn't even have a front desk. They didn't have any, you know, any service at all. All the rooms are on Airbnb. They made them all cute. They were all different themes to do with surfing and the ocean and the seaside. And they were off teaching their surfing lessons all day while people were checking in and out. And all they had on staff was a housekeeper. So, you know, they had a revenue stream of the surfing school, and they called it bed breakfast, but it really was just a motor inn. So, you know, people bringing your passion, being able to do what you want to do and tying that to your business also, I think, makes you very successful. But I think, you know, for me, I loved what I did, and I just always wanted to be better. And so I was just constantly brainstorming with my friends. What if we try this? What if I try that? So, you know, I think if someone calls me, a lot of times when they call me, what their question was, you know, they say, oh, I need this. But we end up, once we sit down and talk, it's like, oh, this is where I think you're at. You know, you have to fix this operational problem before you can do anything further. So we may spend the first 3 months on the operational issue. So it's just, you know, I think all innkeepers have different needs. And I find it so rewarding to stay up with the industry now through my work with in-partners, prospective innkeepers, current innkeepers. You know, sometimes talking people out of becoming innkeepers because you can tell they're not going to be successful just because of the way they perceive what the business is. But I just feel really blessed to still have, you know, it's been 10 years since we sold our inn, or 12, I think, to still have so much day in, day out contact with the industry.
Excellent. Matt, any other questions? Normally you're the one asking me that.
No, I think we're probably at the point, Megan, where we usually do the wrap-up question. Is there anything else to add or anything we may have missed?
Oh, I probably, but nothing at the tip of my tongue right now. I think I've covered a lot of territory, and I feel like, you know, if your audience, if you have people in your audience that have questions, I am happy to always have a conversation with people. I don't start the meter running when somebody calls me, you know, conversation to see if we're a good fit, or if sometimes just a phone conversation can solve the problem. But I think it's an industry where you don't wait too long to reach out for help, because it's very hard when you do that. Don't let a problem get so big that you can't respond to it. And sometimes people are short-sighted. I don't want to make the investment. And, you know, then it's a lot harder to recover from.
That's great. Those are wonderful parting words there for our guest today, who is Megan Smith, who is a renowned innkeeping expert, who has her own consulting business, and who is also the host of the Inside Innkeeping podcast. And as we discussed, she co-owned and operated the Vermont Inn for 13 years and also served as the Vermont State Tourism Director. And again, she was kind enough to share her insights into how innkeepers can embrace Airbnb, maximize their overall revenue, and remain competitive. And we really hope you enjoyed this episode of the Frictionless Innkeeper podcast, brought to you by the Frictionless Guest app. If you wish to learn more, please visit frictionlessguest.com. Once again, that's frictionlessguest.com. And Megan and Steve, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you, Matt.
Thanks, Matt.